Time to get our local view. A lot to discuss. It's that crossover time of year. He's the fine columnist for the Register Guard. Catch his work in the sports section. See what you've missed online at registerguard.com. Follow along on Twitter. The handle at Austin Meek RG. Austin, how you doing today?
Hey, Steve, I'm good. Getting ready to take the little guy out trick-or-treating later tonight.
Well, that sounds fun. How old now? Three?
Almost three, yeah. He's a firefighter this year.
Okay. Yep, our four-year-old is a Ghostbuster, so I don't know. I think they might be able to work in sync there and do some good out in the streets.
Yeah, if they cross paths.
You got it. Well, actually, you're not supposed to cross streams, but I see what you mean. let's try for some chronology here. So you were at Reser Stadium last night. It was a gut-punch loss for Oregon State. You know, they were a first down from a win. Their most reliable guy fumbles. The Cardinal convert that fourth down. They win the game. But I thought your angle was interesting. After being basically pounded most of the season, it was actually nice to be competitive enough to kind of experience the misery of a tough loss, right?
Well, sure. I mean, that's what college football is all about. And that doesn't make you feel any better when your team is on the losing end of it. But that was a fun college football game if you didn't have a rooting interest in it. And you couldn't have said that about really any of Oregon State's games while Gary Anderson was still there.
Sure.
They just were not competitive against anybody except Portland State. But in two games under Corey Hall, they've been right there. You know, they had a chance to beat Colorado. I thought should have beaten Stanford, and, you know, you give Stanford credit for making a big play to take the ball away from Ryan Nall, making a big play on fourth down, making a big play on the touchdown with 20 seconds left. Stanford certainly did what it needed to do to win the game, but it does constitute progress for Oregon State that they were in position to lose a game in such devastating fashion, even though I'm sure it didn't feel good if you're an Oregon State fan.
Now, one thing in general, Reser holds 43,000. 4 weeks ago, there were 37,000 for the Huskies, 33,000 for Colorado 2 weeks ago. It's listed as 30,000 for the game last week. I mean, TV could only offer so much. You were there. It seemed like it was sparsely attended. What was the feel you got?
Well, when they announced that 30,000 figure in the press box, there was an audible groan of people saying, no way, there's 30,000 people here. To me, it didn't look any more than half full.
Oof.
Which was not a big surprise. I mean, Oregon State is, what, 1-7, playing on a Thursday night, 6 o'clock. You know, it's hard to get people in the stands for the weeknight games anyway. And with the season going the way it's gone, I certainly was not surprised to see that many empty seats. But, you know, it's kind of the reality in the Pac-12 now, where the weeknight games, the night games are a hard sell for everybody, and if your team is not playing well, in some cases even if your team is playing well, there's going to be quite a few empty seats.
Yeah, I guess it was early Halloween. They were there, they were just dressed as empty seats.
Maybe that was it, yeah.
Let's move to Saturday at a sold-out Autzen Stadium. Duck fans there to see a three-game skid end. Eye on Darren Carrington. There was a lot of discussion. You know, we know the story, the three strikes here. He's out. So what was your read on the booing from the moment Don Essig announced his name and maybe in the aftermath, time to get over it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a supporter of the First Amendment and the right of fans who pay for a ticket to express themselves however they please. So if you want to boo somebody, I'm not going to tell you not to. You know, I'm not going to say that it's bad taste or poor form or whatever. Fans being fans is how I look at it. But I did want to point out that, you know, it seemed a little misplaced to me to be focusing on Darren Carrington, when to me the story of that day was the way Oregon responded to so much adversity that had come their way in the last couple weeks. You know, they had their back against the wall. A lot of people had given up on their ability to win a game without Justin Herbert. So to come out and to win a game like that against a team that we thought was supposed to be pretty good, I thought that really said something about Oregon. I thought it was significant that Darren Carrington's success, he caught 9 passes for 130 yards, but it didn't come at Oregon's expense. The Ducks were just fine without him.
We're talking with Austin Mika, the Register guard. There was a song, What a Difference a Day Makes, and a million years ago I did a project on the day before, December 6th, 1941, November 21st, 1963, and obviously it's a drop in the ocean, but I thought you made an interesting point because last Friday I did a poll for a month's pay, you think Oregon will get 6 wins in a bowl, and it was about 60-40 against, but now, like you said, after one game, it really changes the entire outlook.
Well, it does, because we hadn't seen anything up to this point that suggested it was possible. I mean, what did Oregon do in any of those first 3 games without Justin Herbert to make you think, oh, yeah, they're going to come out and score 40 points and beat Utah? Nothing. There was no sign that was coming. So it does totally change the outlook of things. If nothing else, it means now all Oregon's got to do to get to a bowl game is beat Oregon State in the last game, if it comes to that. Maybe they'll get a 6th win before that, but that all they have to do now is win the Civil War, and they're going to a bowl game. So it does change the outlook, and I think last week we talked a little bit about the concept of momentum and how fickle it is. Last week it was like, gosh, Willie Taggart's first season, it's looking like maybe it's going to go off the rails here because the quarterback got hurt. Now they win a game and we're talking about, is Willie Taggart going to leave for Florida? So that tells you how fickle the whole concept of momentum is.
Oh, that's perfect. Now let's get to today's article. Spot on. The odd thing is, the last kind of sport that I really became tight with was college hoops because I grew up in a pro city. But from the news about Rick Pitino, you have Bigby Williams here, North Carolina sidestepped the hammer. So unless you're one of these blind followers, is it reasonable to look at the upcoming season and not think, something stinks a little bit?
Yeah, I think that column I wrote today was kind of a confessional for me as somebody who's been a lifelong college basketball fan. I've had this relationship with college basketball since I was a kid. I grew up loving the game, been a part of my life for pretty much as long as I can remember. But going into this season, I do feel a little conflicted about it because of all this stuff that's come up in the off season with the FBI investigations, and you went through it, North Carolina, and here at Oregon, with some of the stuff that came up with Cavell Bigby Williams, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. It's hard to it's hard to get past sort of that distaste you feel for some of the seedier aspects of college basketball, and just be excited about the season. So it was really kind of maybe that was therapeutic for me, if nothing else, to write about just kind of the conflicted feelings that I have about it, being excited for the start of the season, but also feeling like, boy, this game I love, there's a lot that's wrong with it.
Well, a little self-medicating is something I've always been in favor of. So,
no.
Let's get to something really fun. This World Series, I thought Game 5 was as entertaining as anything I've seen in sports, no qualifiers. And it might help that I'm Switzerland. I really don't have a rooting interest, the roller coaster. Now you got Verlander tonight for a first-ever title. It's at Dodger Stadium, historic. So I guess what's been your level of engagement, and do you have a lean either way who you'd like to see win?
Well, it's been a great series, and I'm hoping for 7 games. Doesn't it just feel like a series that's going to go 7 games and Dodgers are going to find a way to beat Verlander tonight and we'll get a game 7, is my feeling. I don't know if it's been the best played World Series we've ever had or the greatest World Series, but man, it's been fun. You know, a game that ends 13-12, you can look back and find a lot of things that both teams could have done, and maybe should have done to win the game before it got to that point. But getting there, if you're an unbiased fan like you and me, it's just fun. So I guess I am a little bit biased toward the viewpoint that a 4-3 game or a 3-2 game is maybe the most intense baseball game you can have. You know, if it had been a pitcher's duel with Kershaw and Keuchel, that would have been fine with me too. I think those games are in some ways more intense than the games where the ball's flying out of the ballpark every inning. But I can't complain. You know, it's fun. It's great drama. It's great spectacle, and I hope we get two more games of it.
Now, along those lines, I have a couple final thoughts for Austin Meek of the Register Guard. We've seen managers kind of alter their path that got them there. And I realize sometimes it's all hands on deck, but pulling starters after four innings when they're not getting crushed, going to your closer who's a one-inning guy for more than an inning. Are we seeing overmanaging, different circumstances? What do you make of it's kind of like the opposite of Dance with Who Brung Ya?
Yeah, you know, it's hard because there's no hard and fast rule on that. You know, there are examples where it works. You know, like the Cubs bring in Wade Davis for a two-inning save, and it works.
Right.
But in other cases, it doesn't. You know, it's just... And this sounds like kind of a cop-out, but it goes back to the fact that managing a baseball game is really difficult. You know, you play the percentages, but the percentages don't always work out. You know, especially, I think part of what we're seeing is, you know, it's really hard to win in the playoffs if you don't have a great bullpen. You know, the Astros, they can mash the ball. They've got good starting pitching, but, you know, that 7, 8, 9 inning, that gets pretty dicey. So every game they're sort of having to mix and match, and to some extent that's true of the Dodgers as well. We've seen a lot of fireworks, and if I was the manager, if I had Clayton Kershaw on the mound, I'd want to ride it out. But you see why managers in some cases become micromanagers in the playoffs, because every decision gets so closely scrutinized.
Yeah, the greatest pitcher we've seen in, of this generation blows 2 3-run leads in one game.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, go figure.
Lastly, at the top of the hour, we hear who the selection committee has in the first college football playoff reveal. There are 4 unbeatens in the Power 5, 5 at the FBS level if you count Central Florida. If Austin had a vote, who make up your top 4 and who just missed out?
Well, if I was voting on that today, I'd probably have Alabama, Georgia, Notre Dame, and I'm going to go with Oklahoma on that at that 4th spot, which may not be how it comes out here in half an hour or so, but that's who I would put in there. You know, the other two unbeaten teams, Wisconsin and Miami, I don't think they've played anybody that would warrant having them in the top 4 right now. Notre Dame, I think with their schedule, their only loss coming in a 1-point game against Georgia, I think they're worthy of being in there. I think Ohio State is going to get a lot of mentions as potentially being one of those teams and may be in there when the committee gives its rankings. But I think the question with Ohio State is, how can you put Ohio State ahead of Oklahoma unless you've just gotten blinded by what happened last week when Ohio State beat Penn State? A great win, take nothing away from them, but Oklahoma won at Ohio State, and their only loss came against Iowa State, which looked bad at the time, but now looks a lot better. So that's why I would have the Sooners slotted in there in that 4th spot.
I'll tell you what, if this were the last week of the regular season, and I were a member of the selection committee, I would hire a bodyguard because people would be losing their minds. But
it's good that we've got some time to get this all sorted out, because right now it's just a mess.
Yeah.
Whoever you put in there now, somebody's going to have a legitimate complaint, and we'll see how much it sorts itself out by the end of the season. I'm guessing that there's still going to be some controversy by the end, but hopefully it'll be a little clearer than it is now.
Yeah, no, it's a joyful mess to end October. Austin, always appreciate you getting our Tuesday off and rolling. Travel safe to Seattle. Enjoy the World Series, and happy Halloweening with your little one, and we'll catch up with you next week.
All right, thanks, Steve.
All right, take it easy.